next. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. And one half of that beautiful artistry that we just heard from the bucolics for viola and cello was that of Kenosha's own Paul Cortese. And many of you know the name of Paul Cortese, a superb violist, born and raised right here in Kenosha, but he has enjoyed a very distinguished professional career in Spain for the last several decades, as a matter of fact, and only very occasionally does his busy life in Spain allow him to return to Kenosha. And it's been a long, long time. In fact, if I understand correctly, it has not been since 2005 that Paul Cortese has been back in Kenosha. But he is back this week. I'm honored that he's made time for the morning show. He is busy at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, where he is serving as the initial visiting artist in a new series that honors the memory of Howard Brown. And as part of what he is doing this week at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, Paul Cortese is going to be sharing the stage with the orchestra at the University of Wisconsin Parkside under the direction of Alvaro Garcia, and we will be enjoying a wonderful performance that's Saturday evening, right?
Yes.
And so anyway, we're going to be talking with these two talented musicians for the next few minutes about this collaboration and about all that is ahead. We welcome both of you to the morning show and to our studios.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Alvaro, I actually want to start with you. I want you to say a word about this new series that honors Howard Brown and his memory, his legacy, and why Paul Cortese is the choice to be the inaugural artist in this new series.
Well, first, it is my understanding Howard Brown and Betsy Brown are great lovers of symphonic music, and at the passing of Howard, Betsy Brown established this fund to actually be able for Parkside to have, I guess, artists of symphonic repertoire come and do either master classes or collaborate with the orchestra. In this case, we have made it such that the first inaugural artist will have a established connection to our local community, and he's able to come here and not only play with the orchestras, but be able to offer master classes to the general public, and also a couple of clinics in the local high schools, in actually Tremper and Bradford High Schools. And we are so happy and so excited to have Paul Cortese, who had such a long connection with this community since he was here. And you know, it has been since 2005 that he had come and do some master classes. That's how I get to know Paul. And we are, as I said, very happy and excited to have him here working with us, working with our orchestras. Yesterday night we have a wonderful rehearsal. And we are looking forward to our concert on Saturday night, which is devoted to not only Paul Cortese as the guest artist, but to the solo instrument as a whole within the program.
Mm. So, in other words, he'll be playing even beyond that concerto?
Well, no, he will be playing the Hofmeister Concerto as mm-hmm. the last portion of the program. But in the first portion of the program, we have also the orchestra's performing Schubert Rosamund Overture. Ah. And also we are going to be performing the two cello concerto of Vivaldi in G minor. But our two own students at Parkside, Cameron Fair and Rebecca Arnold.
Ah.
So it's a little bit of everything connecting the whole thing together, a source of that celebration of the solo voice, but of course culminating with our great soloist Paul Cortese.
Very good. We should mention that you yourself are also a violist. That is your principal instrument.
Yes, and there is a subtle story, probably we won't get into it, but it, you know, I came from Spain here as a violist, and Paul, you know, as a violist, went from America to Spain.
So. Yeah. So you're like a teeter-totter.
Yeah, it's a mirror image, one or the other. One's a little bit older than the other. We won't say which one.
Right.
No, we are all young.
Yes, absolutely. That's what music does to you. Well, again, we're glad that both of you can be here. So, Paul Cortese, we've spoken before on the morning show, but I am fuzzy on the details about exactly what your life was like here in Kenosha growing up here, in terms of where you went to school and at what point music kind of entered the picture for you. I think you are from a family that values music, so I suspect that not long after you were out of the womb, music was probably a part of your life.
Yeah, well, my only brother, who's 5 years older than I'm, Albert, was studying viola here and is a professional violist. He's been living in Great Britain for a long time now. But when I was growing up, I heard the viola constantly at home. And I think initially I wanted to emulate my older brother. And I took up the viola. So both of us are professional violists. And then the Kenosha public school system is absolutely responsible. We all know the story of that. Ralph Houghton organized private lessons in all the elementary schools in Kenosha Unified School District. It was great. I had Barbara Alexander as a teacher, viola teacher, when I was very young, and then Robert Smith at the McKinley Junior High School. And he said, "You have to do this." Bob Smith was very responsible. He said, "You have to become a musician." And I said, "Okay, I'll try." and he said, "You have to go study with Stanley Nosell." And so I did that too. And Stanley was a very big influence. He had studied with Ivan Galamian, the famous violin teacher, and then Tremper was fantastic because we had a chamber orchestra, we had a full symphony orchestra, we did Shostakovich symphonies, Brahms symphonies, and it was amazing.
Incredible.
And at the time we weren't aware of the luck we had, but when I got around to the rest of the country and other in several countries, I realized that it's a very unique public school music program here.
Right.
And I understand it still exists.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very much going strong.
Yeah.
So were you, as a youngster, someone where music was your, in a sense, one and only passion? Is it what you devoted, in a sense, everything to? Or were there other things that would occasionally intrude and draw you away from the viola?
Well, I think initially I spent more time playing basketball than viola. And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was on the Milwaukee Bucks, and and I practiced my skyhook for about two hours a day or whatever, but then music got a hold of me, and there was no resisting it really. And then there was a certain point where I had to leave the Tremper, or the basketball team, and because it was a big conflict of time conflict,
right,
between the music and basketball.
Yeah. But those hard choices get made sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm sure Alvaro had to give up the basketball team too for the same reason, right?
Yeah, well, there was in Spain it's a kind of different system, so you didn't have even time to even visit the park.
That's true.
Yeah. It was a school and then conservatory, and absolutely, that was the end of the day.
That's life then.
That was life then.
Right. Paul Cortese, were you ever tempted to leave the viola for the violin? I mean, even given the fact that you grew up hearing the viola played by your older brother, and it made all the sense in the world for you to choose the viola, but were there ever times when you had violinistic envy? And
that's a very good question, and actually, I think I have a clear answer for that. My generation of instrumentalists was the first generation that were given small violas. Before that, everyone started on the violin, and in the late 60s or early 70s, they decided that psychologically it'd be better to not start out as a violinist and then be in a certain sense demoted to the viola. So because there were some people felt like failed violinists, we know, right, Alvaro?
Yes.
That's it. And so that was a way of avoiding that. And I started on a small viola. It was a small Chinese viola. It was probably a violin.
Wow.
With a C string that sounded like a rubber band strapped on there or whatever. And so started out as a viola, so there never really was a thought to become a violinist.
So it was the viola from the start. I mean,
right.
Literally the viola.
Absolutely
fascinating. I'd never heard that story before.
That was something that began here. The experiment with in the Midwest.
Wow.
With that, yeah.
At what point did you begin to seriously aspire to make this your livelihood, or at least work towards the goal of making it your livelihood?
Yeah, I remember being. I think when I was in McKinley Junior High School, I already knew that I wanted to be a musician. I think I was 14, 15. And I think it's fairly young. These days, well, my own kids who are now growing up in Barcelona, these days people take forever to decide what they want to do. I don't know if it's the same here in the Midwest, but I knew really early on what I wanted to do.
And you wanted to be a performer. I mean,
teacher
okay.
also. Because I had such great teachers. So, I mean, if you come in contact with someone like Stanley Nozzle, then you don't. No one looks down on the teaching profession. It's somebody who really. I mean, Stanley's inspired so many people.
Right.
And I always thought I always had the idea to combine performing with teaching.
Right. When you look back at playing under Robert Smith and then Stanley Nozzle, what do you remember most fondly, or what would you point to as maybe the most significant things that you learned from those
here in Kenosha?
Right.
Yeah. I think just, well, passion, their passion for what they've always, these two teachers in particular had a great, and still have, I'm sure, a great ability to inspire many musicians. And so I think I would say the passion that they have, that they instilled that in all of their students, I think. Mm-hmm.
You went on to study viola at some very impressive places, including the Curtis Institute of Music and New York Conservatory. What was most significant about that next step in your development?
Well, Curtis Institute in Philadelphia, the people who study there, it's the only during the entire 20th century, it was the only conservatory in the United States that gave full scholarships to all of the students. It was very difficult to get in. It's a very select conservatory. There are 100 and so students, and they all have full scholarships. And well, you know, Leonard Bernstein studied there, and these days, talking about someone current, people, Lang Lang, Hilary Hahn, it was a very inspiring place because just this, there was such a high level of performance ability among the student body. So that was very important. Before that, I went to New England Conservatory in Boston, and that was also an excellent school where I had great chamber music training. I had a couple of wonderful teachers. One was Louis Krasner, who premiered the Schoenberg and Albanberg violin concertos, and we studied the second Viennese school quartets with him in the Lyric Suite, and and the violas from the Kolisch Quartet. These are names from the beginning of the 20th century. But I was very lucky because I had contact with chamber music teachers who had contact with the great composers. They knew Ravel. They knew these guys were already in their late 70s, 80s when I studied with them as a kid. So I was very lucky. And that's another thing, as I say, I had the same sensation I had playing in a full symphony orchestra in Kenosha. At the time, one doesn't know the luck that one has. And then it's reflecting on it later on when one realizes that I was very fortunate with all of my teachers.
No kidding. Yeah. Were you always a disciplined musician who loved to practice and had the focus it takes to really achieve excellence, or is that something that, in a sense, had to be taught to you?
I'd like to say yes, but but I can't. I mean, I think we're all distracted when we're in our adolescence, and I was very distracted by girls. Honestly. I mean, that's a common thing, I guess. I still am, but I'm not supposed to say that, I guess, being married for 26 years.
Right.
But I have to say that actually it wasn't so difficult for me to get interested. But I think for me it was realizing that I was wasting a lot of time practicing that really got me to reflect on how I was practicing. And it's a process, I think. I don't know if Alvaro, if you'd agree on that, but I think it's a process that we all go through, is that we find our way. We waste a lot of time practicing in a bad way. Then time concerns force us to learn how to be practical.
Yeah, we learn efficiency.
Yeah.
It's one of the things. Why didn't I think about this way of practicing like 2 years ago?
Yeah, exactly.
I would have accomplished so much more and not wasting my time. But it is a process as you are working and finding yourself, how you work, how your brain works, and how to accomplish things. But it's just about how we accomplish a better efficiency to learn things faster or easier for your body in the economy of movement.
I just want to say about Alvaro is that before we met, we didn't know this, but we have so many common friends on both sides of the Atlantic.
Right? Yes.
And it's really interesting how we absolutely went in, we crossed paths. traveling from one country to the next. But Alvaro was a very accomplished and is a very accomplished violist, but was a very accomplished young violist, played in the youth orchestra, famous Joven Orquesta Nacional de España. He was principal viola there and studied with one of my great, dear, lovely, dear friends, Jesse Levine at Yale University.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's really fun to talk about the viola world with Alvaro.
Let's take a moment here to listen to a little more of your playing. I have four different Paul Cortese CDs in front of me and a couple other things that I've purchased over the years from iTunes. So we have quite a nice array here. You were saying that one of the things that would be nice to sample at least a little bit of would be something by Max Reger.
Yeah.
So just say a quick word about these suites, or are they sonatas?
These are the last, they're three solo viola suites. They're written in 1916. Like so many other composers, Max Reger decided to write for the viola and then promptly died. Isn't it true? I don't know, Shostakovich, Bartok, Dvorak, Brahms, they were all attracted to the viola in their last years of their lives. Martinu also, I believe his Rhapsody Concerto is one of his last pieces. It's probably the dark color that attracted these composers to the instrument.
Hmm. Well, maybe we should hear the soulful opening movement to the first solo suite.
That's fine. Great.
All right. So music of Max Reger and the violist Paul Cortese. Let's listen to this beautiful sound.
Thank you.
Boy, what a beautiful way to celebrate the uniquely gorgeous sound of the viola and the gorgeous playing of Paul Cortesi. This is from his own recording from some years ago of the three solo suites of Max Reger. Paul Cortesi is with us in our studios this morning for Tuesday's morning show, along with Alvaro Garcia, who is the director of the orchestra at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Parkside has welcomed Paul Cortesi back from Spain, where he makes his home, to be the first Howard Brown visiting artist. And Paul Cortesi will be in Francis Bedford Hall Saturday night at 7 p.m. for a concert with the Parkside Orchestra. In a few minutes, we'll talk about the piece that you'll be playing for that. Paul Cortesi, when you first began seriously aspiring to be a professional violist and worked so diligently towards that goal, did it occur to you that your musical life might actually take you far away from Kenosha? I mean, was that even on the radar as a possibility?
Not really. I ended up in Spain in a very just by chance. I was freelancing in New York City. I was playing a lot of Broadway in the late 80s, early 90s. Hmm. And I actually was working too hard. Apparently, from speaking with my colleagues who are still there in New York, musical life has changed quite a bit. There's not as much work as there used to be.
Right.
But at that time, I arrived in New York and I bought an answering machine. And after 4 days, I started getting work, and I worked every day for 3 years. And actually, after 3 years, I was worried about getting burning out. It was just too much. And a contractor, a horn player, Ron Sell, who passed away several years ago, he said, they're looking for principal viola in Barcelona. Would you be interested? And I didn't even know where Barcelona was on the map. I said, okay, well, it sounds like it's Mediterranean, right? Okay, so I'll go. Years before that, I had the possibility to go to Teatro La Scala, which is another story. I had in the back of my mind to go to Europe, because when we were kids, we used to go visit our family in Calabria. My parents, my father immigrated in 1950 after the Second World War, and we used to go back. He always wanted to go back to live, which he never did, because 50 years in Kenosha put an end to that. He did go back to Italy, and he did come to live close to me in Spain, but he spent his time between Barcelona and Rome, which were two really great cities to... I think if you're going to divide your time between two cities, I think that's about the best you can do.
Yeah.
So I have to say that there was no plan to go to Spain, but this job came up. I took an audition in Carnegie Hall, actually. They sent over the director of the orchestra, the concertmaster, and the manager of the orchestra, and I won the principal audition in Barcelona. I went, and I thought, okay, I'll hang out here for a while. I'll get to know some Spanish girls. And after 3 weeks, bam, I met my wife.
Ah.
And then I stayed.
Wow.
These things happen.
Yeah, they sure do. So tell us about what life in Barcelona has been, and especially what that city is like, in every respect, but especially musically.
Well, there's not a great classical music tradition, but... there's a great hall, the Palau de la Música Catalana, and of course there's Pablo Casals, who was actually named Pau, Catalan, great, probably the greatest cellist of the 20th century, and he had an orchestra there. He started an orchestra named after him, which later became the Orquesta Municipal, and with Eduard Toldrá. Eduard Toldrá is a name that we don't know much in North America, but a wonderful composer, violinist from Barcelona, and there is somewhat of a tradition. And another tidbit of information is that I mentioned the Alban Berg Concerto before. It was premiered in Barcelona, actually.
Yeah.
Schoenberg lived in Barcelona, and I think his daughter's name is Nuria. I think he had a daughter named with a Catalan name, a Spanish name. And there's a street in the upper part of the city of Barcelona named after Schoenberg, and he lived on that street. And so there was a tradition, but not a strong tradition like we talk about Berlin or Vienna or Paris or London. But all the artists went through there. say all the great artists of the 20th century performed in the Palau de la Música. It was a beautiful hall. It's like a museum. Mm. Wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful hall.
So what is the city like, and what is it like to live there?
Well, the weather's quite different than here. There are no piles of snow. I actually seen these piles of snow coming back. We brought back not so fond memories of shoveling because we never had a snowblower at home actually. Mm. But anyway, it's nice to see. It's nice to come back and to be in this temperature again. But there, it's let's say in the winter, maybe you know it gets to be. It never gets to freezing. We're always above freezing. It's a typical winter temperature would be 10, 12 degrees, and then it's usually more than that. Last week it was 22 degrees actually.
Celsius.
Yeah, 20 degrees Celsius. Yeah, so what, 50 something, right, or whatever. Yeah, degrees. So it's very mild climate. There's a great architecture there. It's the foremost city for the modernist architectural movement. They're still trying to finish the great cathedral, the Sagrada Familia. Mm. It's supposed to be finished, I think, in 2027. Yeah. And it's quite far along now. And so it's a great city for architecture, great city for eating, great seafood, all kinds of food actually. Mm. It's actually the airport. There are two airports, and it's easy for me. It's great because I can get around. I can get anywhere from there, going east or west, in all through Europe. And it's a good location actually for a musician, I think.
It sounds like you have not been particularly hungry to relocate. I mean that it's been a very happy, satisfying home for you.
Yeah, well, having three children has a lot to do with that. My youngest daughter is 17. She's studying the violin pretty seriously now. And then I have another daughter who's 19, and she's studying audiovisual. She wants to do animation for films. We'll see how that goes. Tough business, I think. Mm-hmm. And then my son is working in pharmacies. He's 24. And so that, of course, having children gives one roots.
So explain to our listeners what your musical life now consists of.
Well, this month I've been to three different orchestras as guest principal. One is in Zaragoza, which is not very far from Barcelona, in Aragon, in the province of Aragon. Played Mahler second. Then my old orchestra in Barcelona, I left it actually very early on. I left it in 1993. I just got up one day from my seat and just left. And they still call me though. So I have a very long relationship with that. I was there just the day before I got here. We played the Rite of Spring with the great conductor Kent Nagano. And the other orchestra is in the Canary Islands. So they have a wonderful orchestra in Las Palmas in the Canary Islands, Filarmónica Gran Canaria. And now I'm here doing master classes and playing Hofmeister with Alvaro and company at Parkside. So it's my life is very, very interesting life. And I'm teaching in Conservatory del Liceo in Barcelona. I have eight viola students and about 30 chamber music students there. And so, yeah, I love what I do, I have to say. And I think you'd say the same, Alvaro. I mean, what we do because we love it.
Yeah, life takes you where it takes you. I mean, it's like if someone would have told me when I was a young kid studying viola in Spain and said to me, someone came to me and says, "Hey, Alvaro, you are gonna be, you know, playing the United States and you are gonna be teaching at the." At a university, an American university. And my first question will be, what, in English? my second saying will be, I wouldn't even give 2 cents for that idea because I don't believe you.
Right.
As I said, life takes you where it takes you. And many things like Paul is by chance, you know, and then you get here. How did I get to Kenosha? I don't know. Sometimes up to this day. But why did I stay? Well, you met your wife,
and that's a typical answer.
And then kids give you roots. So
yeah, that's right.
And that's how your life takes you. And you know, it's wonderful with my kids and my wife. And
wouldn't have it any other way.
You never look back.
Right. Well, we're glad you found your way here, and Paul Cortese, we're glad that once in a while you make your way back here, but it's been not since 2005.
Yeah.
I was going to say that in your first years in Spain, of course, that was long before, not long before, but it was before extensive use of email, and before there was something called Skype and something called the internet, and so I should think that distance maybe felt even you know, yeah, different than it does now.
Yeah, actually, I have to say, I would have done things, if I could do it again, I'd do one thing differently. I would have maintained more contact with the U.S. Because actually, right after I got to Barcelona, my beloved teacher, Joseph De Pasquale, who was my teacher in Curtis Institute, he retired from the Philadelphia Orchestra. And at the time, I didn't really think of it, but I was considered to take his position. I was actually by the people in the orchestra. And I didn't want to hear anything about it because I had my life set up in Barcelona. Mm. It seemed like a complication, but that was a shame because it would have been nice to consider doing that and auditioning for it. Of course, I would have had to win the audition. But being considered for that was quite an honor because Joseph De Pasquale was the great William Primrose's favorite student. And when he retired, I remember the orchestra came to Barcelona and several people on that tour, I saw them in the hotel in Barcelona. The orchestra was on a tour all over Europe. They said, you know, Joseph De Pasquale is retiring. I said, yeah, so what? I didn't even... And I said, yeah, it's about time he retired. He was in his 80s when he retired. Because, I mean, that's something special in the States, that when people are very competent in their job, they don't have to retire. Right. And of course, in Europe, everybody's retired at 65. But anyway, so I didn't, you know, I just didn't want any complications. I had starting my family in Barcelona. And maybe I was just too fixed on that at first. And it would have been nice to maintain contact in New York and Kenosha also. Of course, when I get back, I love it. It's great. I'm going to be seeing a lot of cousins these days. And I think Cortese's Family Restaurant is going to be the
the centerpiece, the hub. I should think. You were mentioning when I played the Reger, that's a recording you made back in 1993, and that you play that piece very differently now. Yeah. Could you say a word about how you, in general, play the viola differently now than you did, for instance, back in 1993? What are the things that change typically for a string player and for you specifically?
Well, in living in New York, string playing is all about power. It's this East Coast brilliant sound, you know, a lot of tension on the instrument. The instruments are set up in on the East Coast. The instruments are set up in the Jacques Francais shop in New York. It was a famous place that all the musicians went. And they'd put a really high bridge on and a lot of tension, a lot of sound. And moving to Europe actually changed that. Hmm. Within a couple of years, I had taken down the tension on the instrument and my approach changed. And I think also the instruments that we play, we were talking about this during the regular, that viola was an old English viola, Peter Walmsley from 1740, very dark sounding. And so on that recording, I hear my vibrato is very wide. It's quite a wide, slowish vibrato, which I don't use anymore. Mm. But I play on a very different instrument. The instrument I'm playing now is much brighter, I think. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say, Alvaro?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a brighter sound. So it's a brighter sound, so I play. Don't play so into the string.
Mm.
I don't. And of course, we're playing. It's a classical. Hofmeister is a classical composer. It's from the Mannheim School with a long orchestral introduction, and the music's very subtle and very. It represents a perfect world. There's no tension in the music. So I vibrate a lot less on that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When we were talking about Saturday night's concert, you mentioned something about the hall where you were going to be playing, and as far as you knew, you might be playing where the orchestra used to play, yes, which was the rather dry Comarts Theater. That is not, it's certainly a serviceable space, and I've heard some great things there, but it is not a particularly kind place to do what you do. Well, but in fact, you're going to be playing in a very different space.
Well, Alvaro, on the way in from, Alvaro was kind enough to pick me up at O'Hare. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And on the way in, I was concerned about the acoustic for playing a viola concerto. A viola needs a warm acoustic to fill out the sound. And I said, Alvaro, what's the acoustic like? And he said, oh, it's very good. And I said, okay. Well, you didn't say enough, Alvaro. This hall...
Francis Bedford Concert Hall.
This is one of the greatest acoustics I've ever heard in my life, and I've been in a lot of halls. Kenosha's really fortunate to have such a wonderful acoustic in this hall.
It's a gorgeous place.
It's a pleasure. It's going to be a real pleasure. I mean, I've been. I'm bothering Alvaro about getting me in there to practice, just because I like the sound so much.
Right. Tell us more about this piece. You've already said a little bit about this composer, Hofmeister.
Yeah,
did you
Franz
say
it's Anton Hofmeister? This is a contemporary of Stamitz, Karl Stamitz. Karl Stamitz and Hofmeister were the big shots in the Mannheim School. They were both performing artists. They played together also. Karl Stamitz was a traveling virtuoso, Czech German Hungarian yeah. background, and Hofmeister was a German background, and these two were constantly performing their pieces. It was we've lost that these days. I mean, I guess in pop music that's where we still have that, right? And it's changed classical music, and the whole world becomes so specialized, right? So everyone does one thing as well as they can, right?
Right. So, yeah, there are not many violists who compose their own music.
These guys were traveling all over Europe playing, performing their own pieces.
Wow.
And this is all contemporary. They're contemporary to Mozart. Mozart was the big inspiration for these pieces. And I find this concerto particularly Mozartian. Wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, when you analyze the piece itself, I mean, it lends itself to say, okay, this is the regularity that you normally will see in Mozart. Another regular structure that you will see in Haydn, for example, composition.
Yeah, the first movement, it's an allegro moderato. Second movement's adagio, and then there's a rondo, which would be typical. Like if we talked about Mozart's fifth concerto or something, the structure's very similar, right?
Wow.
I would say, and beautiful piece, very nice piece. It's actually used a lot on auditions. I'm sure you studied it.
It's one of the pieces, the hallmarks of probably all our students, is that you get to. From the Telemann, there's a point that you get to the Hofmeister, the Stamitz. And Hofmeister this is the one we're performing, the one in D major, but he also has one in B-flat.
B-flat major, which is a more difficult key, therefore it's not done.
There's a difference there,
So you had a rehearsal last night, and how many more times will you get to rehearse with the orchestra
before?
I've
been meaning to talk to you about that. I want another rehearsal.
No, I wanted to make sure that Paul has some free time to talk to his relatives, friends, and here in Kenosha. Our next time together with the orchestra will be at our dress rehearsal on Friday night. Then we have Friday night, and then the Saturday comes.
Very good. Tell us about some of the other things that you have Paul Cortese doing this week as part of this artist in residence series, aside from preparing for Saturday night's concert.
Yes, so today we'll be visiting Bradford High School with its director, Heather Kamikawa, and their students. We'll be doing a master class for several, I think, groups, chamber music groups, because they're all the schools right now. And this is a high time, prime time for all the string orchestras in Kenosha, because just last weekend they had Orchestra Fest.
Mm.
So they take everyone together, and 1,200 students worth, and they all play together. So this is a high time for their directors. Very busy time, and they work tirelessly and incessantly to make a good program for that. And right next, the following week, they have to go and do WSMA, Wisconsin Solo State Music and Ensemble Solo Contest, where all the kids get to play their duets, trios, solos, and so forth. So they again, it's a very too busy weeks for those amazing and hardworking high school orchestra teachers that we have. And so, as I said, today we go to Bradford with Heather Kamikawa. Tomorrow we'll be going to Tremper with Helen Breitenbach. And we are very thankful to both of them to opening their doors and having us coming to work with them. And also on Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock, and this is open to the public, we'll have a master class in which just a few students will play their solos for Paul Cortese. And these are high school students that we have in the area.
Are these open? Can people attend? We haven't spoken about this yet.
Yes, people can attend.
Can I have some favorite cousins come
sure.
and sit in?
Sure.
Okay.
Remind us, our listeners, again, when that masterclass is. That's something
that
I think a lot of people would enjoy.
That masterclass will happen at the Rita Talent Peak and Regional Center for the Arts and Humanities at UW Parkside. And we'll be meeting people in the lobby. And it will be on Wednesday, this Wednesday at 4 p.m. in the afternoon.
Great. And then, of course, the concert with the Parkside Orchestra will be Saturday night at 7 p.m. Paul Cortese, before we let you go, I want to give you an opportunity, because I don't think we've given you that opportunity yet, to say just a quick word about how you and your family knew Howard Brown very well.
Yeah, I think we
and
should
I'm sure you feel supremely honored that
Absolutely.
You are the inaugural artist in this new visiting artist series that has been established in his memory.
Well, Howard Brown is an old family friend, friend of all my family, actually, the Torcasos, Cortese's, the German Arts. We all know him from, of course, as director of the Kenosha News. Last time I was here in 2005, Howard invited me to Frank Steiner for breakfast. It was a lovely time. I have a great my last time with him. I have a lovely memory of that. He was very fond of my parents, and they were very fond of him. And it's a great honor for me to be invited here as a guest artist, a Howard Brown guest artist.
Was it difficult to make this work in terms of your life and your schedule?
Well, yeah, we had to. We were talking
we
about a lot
of
different dates.
We had to play with the dates and so forth, but we finally found that the place where to put it, and I think it's like things happen, you know. It's just sometimes by chance, and we are very happy that we were able to make this work.
So. For me, it's always very special to come back to Kenosha. The last time was 2005. The time before that was, unfortunately, when my mother passed. But actually, I was here one other time. It was in 2012. I came briefly to bury my father's ashes with my mom in St. James Cemetery, which that's a visit I have to make.
Right.
But I still have hundreds and hundreds of blood relatives here, and I'm going to try to see as many of them as I can in a few days.
And aside from the connection, you know, Paul Cortese is an institution in the viola world. As you know, he's able. One of the things that he was able to do is just gather all the violists from around the world into a Facebook group.
Maybe we'll talk about that next time I see you. That's a lot, but we're 9,000 strong members on Facebook. At Facebook violists,
all violists.
Yeah, wow. And it's mostly violists. We welcome viola lovers too. Mm-hmm. So you could join, Greg, if you want.
All right. Well, I used to love the viola until I had to accompany you on the Brahms Sonata. And then I didn't like the viola so much. I love the viola. I didn't like that sonata playing it.
I put you on the spot, Greg. I'm sorry for that.
No, it was a mountaintop experience.
We had a little difficulty. Patricia Black had her time was all taken up with family matters. And I asked Greg to accompany me in the Brahms E-flat major sonata, I think 2 days before the concert. I know you're never going to forgive me for that, but you did a great job.
It was a thrill.
On that concert, there was a very memorable performance of the Brahms two songs with Nancy Henninger and the two of us. And that recording, actually, I've posted on YouTube there's no video of it, but that's a lovely performance. I'm very happy to have done that with you.
It is always a great thrill to encounter a stupendous musician and to share the stage. And I know your young musicians at Parkside have to feel the same way about this concert this weekend.
Yes. And as I said before, we are all very excited. We had a wonderful, wonderful time last night, rehearsing with Paul. And we are all very much looking forward to this concert on Saturday. And if people in Kenosha wants to come and see this concert, I'll advise everyone, because if it is not going to be sold out, it's going to be very close. So go online and buy tickets online, which will assure people a seat on the hall.
Very good. So go to the website of Parkside, which is, of course, uwp.edu. And there's a nice link right on the front page to the arts, and you can pull down for music, and you'll find this concert very easily there. And get your tickets sooner rather than later, or you face almost certain disappointment Saturday night. Sure. Well, Paul Cortese, fresh off the plane, pretty much. I really appreciate you making time for this interview today. It's wonderful to reconnect with you. I know all kinds of people are thrilled that you are finally back in Kenosha.
Thanks a lot, Greg. It's a great pleasure to talk with you.
Great to have you. And Alvaro Garcia, the conductor of the Parkside Orchestra as well. Great to have you here, as always. We wish you and your young musicians the very, very best.
Thank you.
We finish out with just a bit of Martinu at 8:58 here on WGTD. The time is 8:59 on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. Tomorrow on the morning show, Still Music. I'll be speaking with Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli, who is a music professor at Carthage, the director of choral activities there. And we are going to be talking about the next performance at Carthage, which is part of their chamber music series. And it will involve actually Professor Garcia Novelli's master singers from Milwaukee, and they are going to be performing a work called the Misa Tango, and it is by an Argentinian composer who is a friend of Dr. Garcia Novelli's, Martin Palmeri. And we will be very honored to have both of them in our studios tomorrow for